Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. So, y'all, I have some news. So I know that last week I mentioned that I have a whole bunch of things going on that I can't really talk about yet, but now I am able to talk about one of them, and it's one of them I'm really excited about. So without further ado, I will tell you that I have been asked to serve as a steering committee member of the Safe Red Panda Program. I obviously said yes, and we actually had our first steering committee meeting this week. The committee is made up of 12 individuals who are going to be helping to shape the program, and I'm one of them. It's a really incredible feeling to be part of just such a great program and to help launch it from the ground up. And it's also, you know, very special to me because I'm on the committee with 11 incredible individuals, including some guests you'll recognize, like Lisa Termini from the Toronto Zoo, Sarah Glass from Zoo Knoxville, and Nikki Boyd from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. It was such an incredible feeling to be sharing a Zoom meeting and tossing ideas around with people who, honestly, I sat in awe of them when I was interviewing them all at various times. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, some imposter syndrome did creep in at first, but then it faded when I realized I actually did have like worthwhile contributions to make. So yeah, that's the next step on this crazy animal journey for me. I still have a lot of other stuff in the works that I can't discuss yet too, animal music and beyond, but you know, hopefully soon. So that is my big exciting news. I'm assuming, I mean, y'all listen, so I assume you know what the SAFE programs are, but if not, they are the AZA's Saving Animals from Extinction programs, and they basically are programs that are set up to deal with in situ conservation efforts, so the efforts actually in the native ranges of the animals, and you know, they're out there doing really amazing work. We had some really cool conversations about, like, stuff we can partner with Red Panda Network with, and also stuff that they're not doing that we've thought of and maybe can make some of our early initiatives focus on. So yeah, it's really an honor to be a part of this, and I'm very excited to be doing this. So I'll be keeping y'all posted on the socials and on here, of course. But that's my big exciting news. And I guess it's been a minute since I've done this. So, you know, for those that are new listeners, this is Rossafari Zoo News, and it is a crowdsourced news program. So if you happen to see any stories that you think would fit Zoo News, go ahead and tag me in them on the socials at Rossafari or email them to me, rossafaripod@gmail.com, or, you know, message them, send me paper airplanes, whatever. And if you do, I'll say your name at the end of the episode. So I think that's all we've got to say, so let's get to it.
Well, it's one for the pandas, two for the bears, three for the monkeys. Now you should care. Now won't you listen to Zoo News? Oh, you could do anything, but why not listen to Zoo News? Well, it's a
All right, so for our headline story of the week, I find it necessary to yet again discuss something that happened on social media, this time involving our friends at the Columbus Zoo. This week, the zoo announced the hiring of Sathu Elagappan as the new director of diversity, equity, inclusion, access, and belonging, or DEIAB, at the zoo. And they are apparently using the acronym DEIAB for the title, and then some of the initiatives are DEI and some of them are DEIAB. Anyway, Sathu does not come from the zoo world, but instead has a master's in strategic human resources and over 20 years of experience in the DEI field, along with being an Interculture Development Inventory qualified administrator. So basically what I'm saying is she brings a lot of knowledge and experience to the Columbus Zoo in this new role. And, you know, honestly, it is a role that is essential, at least in the United States. I can only speak to that. But there is a major lack of diversity in the zoo field, especially when it comes to zookeepers. Man, how many times have I had a person of color on the podcast only to be told they were the only one at their zoo, or that they never saw anyone who looked like them growing up, so they didn't even think that zookeeping was a career that would be, like, accessible to them? It's honestly a story y'all have heard on here a bunch of times, and honestly, it would be significantly more times, except that there is honestly such a lack of diversity in the field that it's hard for me to field a lot of diversity when it comes to my guests. Got a whole lot of young white women on this this podcast, you know, and we've gone into other areas when we can't. But yeah, it can be really tricky. So first of all, I just want to start off by saying that I think this is a really cool role and that I'm proud of the Columbus Zoo for creating this position. You know, I've heard from many people that the new leadership at the zoo, especially new president and CEO Tom Schmidt, has a really just great vision for growth and change at the zoo, while, of course, still keeping it the amazing institution we all know the Columbus Zoo to be. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the leadership team continues to do as they grow in their roles at the zoo. However, if you go entirely off the reactions to the post about Sathu's new position, you might assume I'm the only person excited about it. People were vicious, malicious, completely over the top. You know, I'm not going to lie, it still surprises me to see so many people willing to just expose themselves as racist or sexist or, you know, whatever other ism they're holding on to. But they do this online with no concern for repercussions or even any shame. You know, it was a cesspool in there. And again, this is Facebook. This is people posting under their own names. And you can go and click on their profiles and, like, see who they know and where they work and, like, watch them play with their kids or whatever. Like, don't be creepy about it. But, like, I don't know. That's just part of what confounds me about being so hateful on social media. It's like, we can see a lot about you. You are exposing yourself, you know, not under the name Edgelord143, but under your first and last name and with pictures of your kids on vacation with you or whatever. I don't know. It's all just really weird to me and speaks to just how much they believe that, you know, their views are prevalent, are right, are the same as everyone else's. But yeah, so anyway, sorry, this is a thing I think a lot about, but the comment section became a cesspool. And a group of us from the industry actually tried to go in and make positive comments. But it had gotten so bad so quickly, the zoo actually had to move to limit comments before all of us could even get around to posting all of the positivity. I was able to make a quick comment, but then I was going to come post on socials asking y'all to go and post positive stuff. Because, you know, if you've been with the Raw Safari community for a while, you know that we have done that before. And honestly, those are some of my favorite memories of our time together with this podcast, when we all come together and brighten up some dark comment sections. But yeah, I was going to ask you to do it, but then comments were limited, and like, rightly so. I'm really glad that the zoo did that, because it was honestly just disgusting. I did try to read through a bunch of the comments and the comments on the comments, and at first I was like, maybe I'll grab some of the worst ones for here, because I knew I was going to talk about this, but nah, I'm not broadcasting those things. These people aren't worth my time, and frankly, I don't want them to exist in my own mind more than they already do just from reading the stuff. So I'm going to let it lie, and I'm not going to share those things with you. But to give you a kind of numeric example of how overwhelming the hate was, all I did was I commented, "I love to see this," right? It wasn't my most eloquent post ever. But the comment got one angry reaction, two hug reactions, 8 loves, 28 likes, and 106 laugh reactions. And honestly, most of the likes and loves came from people in the industry who know about Raw Safari and were involved in trying to, you know, brighten up that comment section. We were all liking each other's stuff. So yeah, those numbers are dismal. And when you take those people away, it's really dismal. Anyway, when the zoo limited comments, they posted the following statement, and I'm going to read it in its entirety, quoting it exactly here. "Hi, everyone. As you've most likely noticed, we've chosen to limit comments on this post, and you may ask yourself why, and that's okay. It leads back to our mission statement, empowering people, saving wildlife. No hateful comment that targets inclusive ideals, a person in particular, a dedicated zoo staff, etc., upholds our mission statement. So, we're limiting comments until they can become more respectful of other zoo guests, our teams, and the animals in our professional care. The zoo will not tolerate hate, bullying, and threats. This is a family environment, both on zoo grounds and online. We understand the acronym DEIAB itself sparks conversation, and we want you to know that ongoing work to remain equitable, accessible, inclusive, and welcoming have been in place for decades at the zoo. Here's a recent example. In the past few weeks, a glass wall was installed in the Heart of Africa watering hole's fence line. Why? So guests who may be using a wheelchair for mobility can better see the animals in the watering hole, just as well as someone who is standing next to them. It's one of the many ways that the zoo is ensuring that all guests have an opportunity to take in the same experience at the zoo and leave with great memories. As the zoo grows, the new director role will lead efforts like the one above, alongside zoo team members who have volunteered their services on a committee dedicated to guest and staff experiences. We certainly hope you can join us in celebrating their contributions and in supporting our efforts to make sure the zoo can remain an open, supportive, and fun environment for guests and staff alike." End quote. So, yeah, definitely a great statement, but one that I just really, really wish didn't have to be made. The zoo's PR team did an amazing job, as always, but ugh, God, people just suck sometimes. The good news is that these cyberbullies didn't have any real sway in the real world, and they really rarely do. The zoo is not changing its plans because of them. And you know, that's the thing I keep reminding myself when I see this stuff. These people who hate this stuff, who complain that Marvel or Star Wars is too woke, all of that crap as well, they really are a small but vocal minority. But whenever I see them gang up on initiatives like this, I always find myself worried that it's a big enough movement that they don't feel the need to hide, like I mentioned before. And I don't love it. Not gonna lie. On a side note, you may have flagged that the statement from the zoo acknowledged that the term DEIAB itself could be controversial, and that's true even amongst people who support these initiatives. You know, over the years, I have seen DEI become the norm without the AB added on, but I get what they're going for there, and I think it works fine. You know, when we discussed the idea of DEI initiatives in my Project Dragonfly classes, they had a term I think we should adopt for all of these things. They used JEDI, and it stood for Justice, Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion. And you know, it rolls off the tongue. People already know the word, and the people who hate this stuff already think Star Wars is too woke, so I say we just embrace it. But I know the team at Columbus put a lot of thought into adding the AB on to the standard DEI acronym, so, like, I'm here for it. But I still like JEDI, but I'm a huge nerd, so, you know, that's not surprising. But yeah, let's hope that one day soon, conversations like this can be remembered as existing only a long, long time ago. And dang, I wish these people would go to a galaxy far, far away. Anyway, that brings us to our births for the week. All right, the Lee Richardson Zoo has announced the birth of a baby Addix. The parents are named Penelope and Dobby, and since the family is doing well, the little Adlet is being left alone with the family for now. So the zoo doesn't really have any additional information about the baby at this time, but hey, that's actually good news. The Staten Island Zoo has announced the birth of a baby Tamandua named Carrie. Carrie was born to mom CJ, who is an incredibly attentive mother, letting the baby crawl all over her and nurse and just do all the adorable baby Tamandua things. Mom and kiddo remain off exhibit for now, but when Carrie has transitioned to solid foods, they will start to explore their habitat together for all to see. Baby Tams are very cute, by the way. The Caldwell Zoo has announced the birth of Atlas, a baby colobus monkey. Baby and mom are doing well and are already visible on exhibit. Now, while most primates seem to have a great bond between mother and child, this pair seems especially close. So get to the Caldwell Zoo to see this relationship firsthand if you are able to. The Beardsley Zoo in Connecticut has announced the birth of prairie dog pups. Now, since the family groups of prairie dogs at the zoo tend to live complex underground lives away from the eyes of keepers, they don't know exactly how many new pups there are yet, but the ones that have popped out of the holes and started showing up so far are playful and adorable. And of course, that brings us to the other side of the coin, where we say goodbye to some beloved animals, and we start with the loss of yet another red panda, this time in the UK. Scarlet, one of the female red pandas who called Paradise Park in Cornwall home, has passed away at the age of 8. Scarlet was the panda that guests would meet when doing red panda encounters at the zoo, making her not only beloved to her fans and keepers, but also crediting her for raising thousands upon thousands of dollars that went into in-situ conservation efforts for red pandas in Nepal and China. While no cause of death has been reported at this time, there does seem to be a whole lot of loss of pandas in this age range right now. I don't like it. I find it really concerning. So here's hoping it's just a coincidence. And regardless of that, I send my condolences to everyone who loved Scarlet. The Edmonton Valley Zoo has announced the passing of Tuya, a Bactrian camel. She was 3 years old and suffered from hyperparathyroidism that was resistant to treatment and medication. For the last 2 weeks, despite receiving treatment, Tuya was unable to stand, so the decision to humanely euthanize her was made. Tuya was born at the zoo and made a huge mark on her care team, who miss her dearly. Sending them all the love. Little Joe, a 26-year-old Western Lowland gorilla who called the St. Louis Zoo home, has passed away. He had a heart attack overnight and died in his sleep. The zoo had been treating him for heart disease at the time. Little Joe was known for his love of watching people, often hanging out right by the guest viewing areas at the zoo. He had a lovable personality, despite having a perpetually grumpy face. the same, honestly, and will be sorely missed by his keepers and zoo guests. The Tulsa Zoo has said goodbye to Tater Tot, the 9-year-old lowland paca. Way back in January of 2022, vet and keeper staff started monitoring Tater Tot for age-related issues, but he responded well to treatments and made it over 2 more years because of the incredible care he received. Tater Tot was one of the oldest pacas in North America and was known for patiently waiting at his door for his keepers. He is very missed. And last but not least in this section this week, Zoo Knoxville has said goodbye to Tonka, a 46-year-old African elephant who was humanely euthanized this week after being put into hospice care. Tonka suffered from acute pain and swelling in his front left leg, and it was no longer responding to treatment. At 46 years old, Tonka was one of the oldest African elephants in North America, and at 15,000 pounds, he was also one of the largest. Plans had actually been made for Tonka to move to the elephant sanctuary in Tennessee, but those plans had to be abandoned as his pain and suffering from his medical condition were too much for him to deal with, much less be transported. He will be very missed by everyone at Zoo Knoxville, and I'm sending my love to the team there. And of course, that brings us on to the rest of our zoo news. And so before I get too into this section, I did just want to take a minute to tell y'all that I'm doing research into something called the Jane Goodall Act that is being debated in Canada right now. I've had multiple listeners from Canada reach out and share articles about it or share their opinions or ask my opinion, and I'm super grateful to y'all. I want to make sure that when I talk about this, I do it justice, that I'm like fully informed and such. And I don't feel like I'm there yet. There is a whole lot of discussion happening about this. So if y'all are interested, you can look up the Jane Goodall Act on your own. And regardless, if you're one of the people who brought it up to me or if you've thought of doing so, just know that I'm working on it and will hopefully have it on here if I feel confident in doing so, but also won't have it on here if I don't think I can do it justice. A quick reminder also that this Sunday, at least in the United States, it's Mother's Day, and a lot of zoos are doing free admission for moms, like Roger Williams Park Zoo is, or like discounted admission, stuff like that. There are also places like Aquarium of Niagara that are doing special adoption packages for moms, so make sure you consider your favorite zoos and aquariums for both your Mother's Day gifts and Mother's Day plans, if that's your thing. And hey, if you're a person who doesn't celebrate the day or has some strong negative emotions about Mother's Day, well, what better way to get away from those feelings and get in touch with yourself and nature than by visiting a zoo or aquarium on that day? So we're here for everyone as long as we can get you into a zoo or an aquarium. This story is interesting. So while I tend to keep zoo news focused on good accredited zoos, it is worth remembering that there are a lot of zoos that aren't that out there. And a lot of tourist traps around the world still use things like tiger cub petting to try to get people to visit. And so that's why I wanted to take a minute here to say thank you to Carnival Cruise Lines, who have at least one cruise ship right now on which the captain gave every guest a written note suggesting that they avoid any experiences with tiger cubs or any attractions that have something similar to that. A literal piece of paper on every bed of the ship. That's amazing. So I love this so much and want to say thank you for looking out, Carnival Cruise Lines. Getting rid of those types of zoos, taking money out of their pockets, that's a huge help. Amazing. Zoo Dresden in Germany is on the verge of opening its new building, and it is incredible. The orangutan house is home to numerous species, including giant turtles, otters, binturongs, platypuses, and, not shockingly, orangutans. All of this is in a beautiful new building that is a perfect circle with an amazing outdoor area in the center of it. The whole thing is just stunning, so for those listening in Germany, or who might be in Germany, make sure that you head to Zoo Dresden and check out this incredible new area. Say hi to the Bints for me. And speaking of new buildings, Zoo Boise has broken ground on a new red panda habitat. The state-of-the-art habitat will include day rooms, a unique outdoor area, and an overhead walkway to allow pandas the ability to roam in a variety of ways. This actually sounds kind of similar to the current habitat at the Greensboro Science Center, and even somewhat like the outdoor area at the Philadelphia Zoo, two of my favorite places to see red pandas. So, sounds like it will be very cool and very worth checking out. Heading over to Australia for a moment, Zoos Victoria have announced a pretty incredible conservation success story. They teamed up with the Royal Botanic Gardens in Victoria and Moonlit Sanctuary to release 28 zoo-born pukila into their new wild habitats. Pukila, formerly known as the New Holland mouse, are a small endangered rodent that is native to the Victoria area of Australia. This is an awesome story of reintroduction and of partnership between many stakeholders, and hopefully it's just the first of many reintroductions of these little ones back into their native habitat. And then, last but not least in the zoo news section, is a story that I honestly can't. I've seen a lot of stuff with this podcast, y'all, and I cannot believe this one is real. Taizhou Zoo in China has come under fire for the giant panda exhibit they just opened on May 1st. Why, you ask? Is this the latest example of bots and crazy pandas attacking zoos with giant pandas? Well, no. The zoo is in trouble because they opened their giant panda exhibit to much fanfare, and when the first guests flocked to see the new animals, they didn't see giant pandas. Not because they were inside or off exhibit or hiding somewhere away from public view. Nope. It was because the exhibit was filled with chow chows. The dogs. Yep, chow chows. The owners of the zoo trimmed and dyed the dogs to look like giant pandas, generating complaints not only of misleading the public, but of animal cruelty, as some people believe it is wrong to style a dog that way or dye them. Now, it is worth mentioning that there are dyes that are perfectly safe to use on dogs. But anyway, yeah. The zoo opened a giant panda exhibit with dogs instead of giant pandas, which is crazy. And when they were asked why they did this, they said it was because they don't have giant pandas. I mean, fair. But, yeah, but what's even crazier about the fact that they did this? Y'all, it worked. The story went viral in China, and now people are traveling to the zoo in record numbers to see the fake pandas, standing in line, just like they do for actual giant pandas. I cannot for the life of me decide whether this is brilliant marketing or idiotic and they got lucky or like all of the above, but this is blowing my mind. But that brings us to
Stereotypical Animal Podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
All right, so last week, our births section of Zoo News was filled with stories about a total of 15 red wolf pups born at three different zoos. Well, those weren't the only recent red wolf births, as the Red Wolf Recovery Program has announced the birth of 8 red wolves in the wild this week. 8 pups! That's incredible! These 23 red wolf pups are so important since there were only around 35 left in the wild before this litter. So it is just awesome to see this program having success with both in situ and ex situ conservation efforts. Yay, puppies! And the aforementioned wolves are not the only exciting birth that I have to announce in conservation news this week, as a new Javan rhinoceros calf has been spotted at a national park in Indonesia. The park has an extensive network of camera traps set up, and that's where the calf was spotted. Until now, there was actually a question of whether Javan rhinos were breeding in the wild, and even a concern among some conservationists that the remaining population had somehow forgotten how to breed or were having problems doing so or something that was preventing them from breeding. So this little baby is a really big deal. The United States National Parks Service has announced the death of mountain lion P-47. P-47 was one of the collared mountain lions the NPS tracks to better understand these animals and was actually the largest of the collared mountain lions. His death was not from natural causes, but instead was caused by rodenticide. It is believed to either be secondary or tertiary poisoning, meaning that P-47 either ate an animal that had ingested the poison, like a ground squirrel, or ate an animal that had eaten an animal that had ingested the poison, like a coyote. Along with this loss, biologists have documented the presence of an anticoagulant rodenticide in 21 of 22 mountain lions they have tested recently, including a three-month-old kitten. Now, this is especially unsettling because there are other ways to handle rodent problems than by using anticoagulant rodenticides, meaning these deaths are even more unnecessary than just already being unnecessary because, you know, we should just let rodents live. But yeah, this is another one of those things where people just need to learn and do the right thing. And honestly, without even really inconveniencing themselves much, they could have a huge impact on wildlife. But on a happier note, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recently discovered a leatherback sea turtle nest in South Carolina, the first one found in the state since 2020. Based on the tracks, it seems the mother turtle wandered all around the beach searching for a perfect spot for her nest before picking an absolutely terrible spot and laying the eggs. Fortunately, this all occurred on protected land, so the Fish and Wildlife team were able to find the nest and relocate it to an area that won't be flooding regularly. I'm so excited that there's a leatherback nest in South Carolina now. That's huge. But I also remain just constantly amazed at the fact that sea turtles have survived so long when they seem just so bad at things like nesting and, you know, eating. The cost of fireworks is rising and has actually been on the rise for multiple years now, which is weirdly a great conservation story. So more and more communities are eschewing fireworks shows, especially the really big ones like we see all over for Independence Day. In fact, Attleboro, Massachusetts, is trying to do a laser light show instead, which is not only roughly half the cost of the fireworks display, but also won't have the loud booms that bother wildlife and, you know, zoo animals, which is especially nice since Capron Park Zoo is right there. Fireworks shows are quite the beautiful spectacle, and I completely get why people love them so much. But, you know, in this day and age, there are other options that cause less harm to animals. And the fact that those options are also becoming significantly cheaper than actual fireworks is really good news for animals. And then last but not least in this section, a Chilean food company called NotCo is working to help save sea turtles in a unique way. NotCo is a food tech company that creates plant-based alternatives for popular meats consumed by humans. Chicken, beef, that kind of stuff. They are now turning their attention to creating plant-based substitutes for endangered animals that are hunted for their meat. Their first product is focused on replicating green sea turtle meat, which is used in sopa de tortuga, or turtle soup, a popular dish in coastal areas of Asia and Latin America. The company is actually using AI to analyze plant flavors and come up with the recipes that will replace the endangered meat sources because AI is able to dial in the flavor significantly faster than human scientists can. The press release about this didn't say exactly how long the formulation of the artificial sea turtle meat took using AI, but they did say it was significantly faster than when they have done it by trial and error with humans in the lead. This kind of technology could have an incredibly fast and incredibly huge impact on the illegal poaching industry. Now, I have to rain on the parade a little bit. There is always the argument made when something like this happens that when we create artificial products like this, it will allow more people to try things like sopa de tortuga and drive up demand for the actual product as well. And that it could also make the actual product with actual sea turtle meat more desirable for those who see it as a status symbol to eat the real thing. And I think all of that is fair. There are people who, you know, if this becomes a common food made with a vegetarian version of sea turtle meat, then yeah, they're going to want to eat the real thing because they think that's somehow cool and they can afford it because money. But I do have to say that, I don't know. I think the overall impact will be a reduction of sea turtle poaching. And, especially if Natco is able to make their artificial sea turtle cheaper than the real thing. I mean, it's certainly already more legal to obtain. So while there may be those consequences to some degree, I genuinely think this is a really cool thing. And I'll be curious to see what other meats they try and kick out next and how effective they are. And that actually brings me to an interesting question. I want to hear from y'all. Could you do it? Could you eat a completely plant-based meat that tastes like an animal that you love? Like, the fact that this is sea turtle is really hitting home for me because, like, not only do I love sea turtles, but, like, in a couple hours, I'm going to go hang out with Squirt at the aquarium again. I, like, really love sea turtles. And so, like, I don't know, y'all, is that something that I could eat if it was fake, but then I would know what they taste like? I genuinely don't know the answer. But if you do, tell me your thoughts on this, especially if it's, like, a favorite, you know, animal for you. Could you eat elephant if you love elephants? Would anyone try red panda? Again, what I'm talking about is the purely vegetarian version of it. But, like, you know, if it truly tasted like the real thing, would you be curious to know what it tastes like? I don't know. I don't think I would, but I don't know. But yeah, let me know what you think. I'm really curious now.
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, now, right now, right now, it's time. It's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the podcast.
All right, so we know that primates use tools, but a Sumatran orangutan has taken that to a whole new level. A wild orangutan, known as Rakus to researchers in Indonesia, was seen with a large wound on his cheek. And Rakus found a medicinal plant and turned it into a topical medicine. And this was like a real process in which he chewed the stem and leaves of the plant, which is an anti-inflammatory and antibacterial plant that is used by humans locally to treat malaria and diabetes. He was able to get a liquid out of the plant by doing this that he applied directly to his wound, and then he covered the liquid with the chewed leaves and stems, which helped them to stay in place and protected both the wound and the healing liquid underneath it. Applying the plant to his face regularly for a month caused the wound to close and heal. And this is the first time humans have recorded an animal in the wild treating an injury with a medicinal plant. Now, to be clear, we do know that great apes use medicinal plants when they aren't feeling well. Jane Goodall documented chimps consuming plants that were medicinal. But this is the first time one has been seen using one on an injury and, like, going out of its way to create a poultice and all of that. That's really, really incredible. Very cool. And then last but not least, in other news, the NFL draft took place in Detroit 2 weeks ago. Now, you may be wondering why that is being mentioned on an animal podcast, but hey, the league has ravens, lions, eagles, and more. So, anyway, here is a list of the first round picks in order. Pick number one. No, I'm kidding. But what is relevant to this podcast is that a lot of temporary construction happens when the draft moves from city to city, since they, like, build a stage and green rooms and all this stuff. And the materials used for the draft in Detroit are being donated to local nonprofits, including Detroit Dog Rescue, which will be using the free materials to build a spay and neuter clinic on Detroit's east side. Yay, recycling!
Animal, animal, animal holiday.
All right. It is May, which is National Duckling Month, National Lake Cleanup Month, and No Mow May. Then for your individual days, May 10th is National Shrimp Day. May 11th is World Binturong Day. Woo! And World Migratory Bird Day. Love you guys too, but binturongs. May 13th is Frog Jumping Day, and May 16th is National Sea Monkey Day and International Sun Bear Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. All right, so there you have it, folks. Another week of Raw Safari Zoo News is in the books. I'd like to take a moment to say thank you to all of my patrons, especially my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And I'd like to remind y'all that you can go to patreon.com/rawsafari to support the pod for as little as $3 a month. And actually, a pretty cool little mini announcement. I can't tell you what it is, but I'm going to start doing something pretty special for my patrons. There's going to be some bonus audio, but it's not going to be the stuff from like episodes like I do sometimes that I've talked about on here before. It's going to be their own little special look into something special. And I literally can't say what it is because I'm probably not allowed to do it, but I'm gonna. So that's going to be starting soon. So if you're curious what I'm talking about, patreon.com/rawsafari. Anyway, I'd also like to say thank you to everyone who contributed this week, including Anya Keene, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Ken Tryon, Justin Williams, Emily Rockbuck, Tiana, Sam Evans, Marianne Rossi, Cassie Light, Dr. Laura Shank, Kristen Khalil, Matt Patford, Jay Meredith, Christopher Gross, Matt Patford. I wrote your name twice, so I'm saying it twice. Oh my goodness. Dr. Zoe Rossi, Anne Yoshioka, Ali Malensky, Kay Malensky, the Malenskys. That was weird. I do that weird sometimes. And Rowena White. Thank you all for contributing so much. And remember, friends, the words Newsy Credits Backwards are, you guessed it, Stider Kuswin.
The Raw Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rawsafari or by email at rawsafaripod@gmail.com. Rawsafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
All right. It is May, which is National Drinking Month. It's Duckling Month. That wasn't even close. I don't even really drink. Wow. I'm having a rough month, y'all.